WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. She's finally free. Britney Spears won a legal battle to end a conservatorship that controlled so many aspects of her life. Fox's Marianne Rafferty.
Judge Brenda Penny saying that all parties are in agreement that Spears does not lack capacity in making her own decisions, ending a conservatorship that lasted nearly 14 years. The singer publicly spoke out against the conservatorship during a lengthy testimony in June, calling it abusive and demoralizing, and saying her father, Jamie, who was in charge of both her estate and her personal life, and anyone else involved in the arrangement, should be jailed. Adding, quote, "I just want my life back. It's been 13 years and it's been enough. I want to be able to be heard."
Fox's Marianne Rafferty reporting. Spears' father told the judge he supports the decision. The cost for everything these days is going up as inflation soars. Medicare's no exception, but the reason's not inflation. An Alzheimer's drug is being blamed for about half of the whopping $22 increase. That's one of the largest increases ever. The new Part B premium will be $170 a month. The increase guarantees that health care costs will gobble up a big chunk of a boost in the Social Security cost of living allowance. The effort to draw new congressional and legislative maps in Virginia hits another snag. A bipartisan redistricting committee couldn't agree and pass the job over to the state Supreme Court. Democrats and Republicans nominated expert advisors to work with the court, but yesterday, the court rejected all three of the GOP's choices and one of the Democrats, saying they weren't neutral enough.
The courts have made it clear that highly partisan choices are problematic. And so it's back to the drawing board for new names for at least some of the nominees.
Political science professor Dr. Stephen Farnsworth with the University of Mary Washington thinks the court could approve one nominee from each party by the end of the month. President Biden plans to bring in someone to oversee implementation of his trillion-dollar infrastructure bill, which he plans to sign on Monday.
Ahead of a bill signing ceremony for his long-sought infrastructure proposal, President Biden told members of his cabinet there's a high obligation and responsibility to ensure money is spent wisely and for its stated purpose.
Because if we do it right, we know what it will mean. We know what it will mean. It'll create millions of new jobs. It will grow the economy.
The president is expected to name a coordinator to oversee infrastructure implementation next week, comparing the role to one he had as vice president and earning the nickname Sheriff Joe by then President Obama. At the White House, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
Protesters are planning to camp outside Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell's D.C. home for 25 hours straight this weekend.
Hope Nair with Shutdown D.C. says the event is to draw attention to the filibuster, which she says is blocking important legislation.
Helps prevent us from getting access to adequate health care, to appropriate child care, to, in many cases, voting rights.
Demonstrators will gather Sunday, sleep in a nearby park, and then return on Monday.
We're going to have four rallies and dozens of speaking slots.
President Biden has said he wants to change the filibuster, not get rid of it. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Caps beat the Blue Jackets 4-3. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Jim Lavin in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Traveling on the inner loop of the Capitol Beltway between Route 50 and 202. Did have reports of an earlier crash in that stretch. Police have not found it yet, but still heavy delays. Be very careful, watch for the brake lights. Just south of the Beltway, more brake lights on the inner loop or outer loop ramps as you get onto southbound New Hampshire Avenue. Southbound at Oakview Drive. Two right lanes are taken away just after the intersection. Single left does get you by. Route 3 eastbound near Bloomsbury Road. We have crash activity with all lanes closed eastbound Kings Highway near LaGrange Lane. I'm Jim Lavin, now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, stray showers this morning, clearing this afternoon, temperatures in the 50s, tonight clear and cool, temps in the 30s. Right now, 48 degrees in Washington, I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update.
It's the Saturday Morning Update, Veterans Day weekend. Hour two, I'm Rick Fowler, and John Gizzi joins us each week. He's the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, great to have you with us.
Great to be here. What a week it was.
And what an end to that week, John. We find Steve Bannon indicted for contempt of Congress and threats that Mark Meadows will be next. What does it mean exactly to be indicted for contempt of Congress? Can they incarcerate you? Fine. What happens?
Yes, absolutely. Incarceration can and has taken place. In the late 1940s, the House Committee on Un-American Activities investigated alleged communist sympathizers in and outside the government. If one defied a subpoena or refused to answer questions, he or she could be cited for contempt of Congress. And several were, and several actually went to jail. More recently, it has just meant threats against the person. But in this case, it appears as though the January 6th commission is going to go all the way. As you said, Steve Bannon has been indicted for contempt of Congress. On Friday, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows was given an ultimatum, which was to appear before the committee or be cited for contempt of Congress. He chose the latter, and his attorney, George Terwilliger, told reporters he needed time to prepare his testimony and prepare for the questioning of the committee. The committee said he had enough time, and in all likelihood, they'll pursue the same endeavor as they did with Steve Bannon. Now, does this mean that Meadows and Bannon will eventually wind up in jail? Probably not. And in the end, it is likely that some kind of compromise, either responding to written questions or actually appearing after a period of time, will be worked out.
You were in the White House briefing room on Friday afternoon. What is the latest from the White House on the movement of Russia at the Ukraine border and Belarus?
Nobody is saying anything yet. There were rumors Friday evening that the president would try to set up a virtual call with Russian President Vladimir Putin as soon as possible. He already has a call scheduled with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Monday evening. But right now, as it stands, Russian troops are poised at the Ukraine border. There is nervousness, and the Ukraine foreign minister said that the Russian troops could overcome us whenever they want. In addition, the corollary is that the Belarusians are escorting illegal immigrants from all over to the Polish border. Polish troops are amassed at the border, and the Russians had a flyover on Friday. To complaints from the United States, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov simply said, or I'm paraphrasing, it's none of your business. So what we are seeing is the genesis of the biggest foreign policy crisis of the Biden administration since the pullout from Afghanistan. We'll hear a lot more next week.
From your past experience, what would the UN do and what would it mean? Probably not a lot.
It's not just the UN, it's the European Union, and they're beginning to discuss possible sanctions against Russia, although they've had many sanctions against Moscow in the past, and it hasn't deterred them. Regarding the United Nations, they can censure the Russians, they can call for action, but also remember that any kind of these resolutions can be vetoed by the Russians or by any allies they may have on the UN Security Council. There's also an attitude in some countries, and to a degree here, that this is their business, that what Putin does with his neighbors is up to him and shouldn't concern us. You'll see a rich debate on internationalism versus non-intervention in the days ahead.
So I guess my question about what can the UN do is a waste of your time, my time, and our listeners' time this morning. Let's move on. Jack Cittarelli concedes in New Jersey, but the truck driver wins. Tell us about the Jersey outcome.
The Jersey outcome was one that, if I had been able to write about ahead of time, you would have said I had the gift of prophecy. All polls indicated that Democratic Governor Phil Murphy would win, if not by a landslide, comfortably. As it turned out, it took more than a week to count all of the ballots, including the absentee votes and the early voting. And in the end, he beat Jack Cittarelli by a narrow 51-49% margin, something no poll saw ahead of time. Jack Cittarelli, once the inevitable became apparent, conceded yesterday, very graciously, I might add, and said he'd be back to run in 4 years when Governor Murphy is turned out. Perhaps an even bigger story from the Garden State comes from the defeat of Steve Sweeney, Senate President, Democrat, and the most powerful politician in New Jersey after the governor. He lost to a truck driver named Ed Durr, who spent about $230 by most estimates, and that was on brochures, his website, and donuts for people who walked door to door to him. His message simply was he wasn't an insider, he wasn't the Senate president, and that this person who sponsored legislation to keep people from going to work and from going to church had to go. The voters apparently agreed. I might add that Ed Durr, Senator-elect Durr, I should say, was asked the first thing he would do when he went into the Capitol. He said, I don't know. But sometimes it's best to say, I don't know if I don't know, because I'm sure going to find out.
So everybody's talking about the cost of the Build Back Better program. Many votes are hinging on the outcome of the Congressional Budget Office score. Now, this is for, of course, the second legislation, the Build Back Better, or the social legislation. And what do we know about when that will come out and what it may say?
Virtually everyone in official Washington expects the Congressional Budget Office to score or put a price tag on the Build Back Better bill, which is so cherished by the administration and so pursued by the House Democratic leadership. Right now, its supporters say it will cost $1.75 trillion. The CBO scores, which will sink the measure or secure it, are going to be very critical. These will determine whether or not it costs a lot more, and at least five middle-of-the-road Democrats say they won't vote for the package if it's too costly. Many outside economists and the Wharton School of Finance say that this is a lot more costlier than we are led to believe. Art Laffer, the economist and author of much of the economic legislation of the Reagan and Trump administrations, said when one factors in the future damage to the economy, it's more like $6 trillion. We'll see what it is, but all of these figures are going to be known by the public. And after that is done, we'll know the fate of the administration's most cherished item, the Build Back Better bill.
And, John, it is Veterans Day weekend, and we lost a heroic veteran, a member of the Senate, Senator Max Cleland from Georgia, a triple amputee, and he served in Vietnam, he served in the Senate, and he passed away this week.
Max Cleland was someone who had played basketball and run track when he was in high school, and then a freakish grenade accident cost him use of both legs and one arm. He could never pursue the dreams he had earlier. So following his discharge, he went into politics and at age 28 was elected state senator in Georgia. He went on to head the Veterans Administration under his friend President Jimmy Carter, and then from there went on to serve a term in the United States Senate. For someone who thought that he would be relegated to the status of cripple, amputee, or one of the wounded, he was an inspiration to all, an overcomer. Max Cleland, former senator and hero.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
And as we recall Veterans Day, I recall an interview with another American hero, Roger Soucy, U.S. Army veteran who saw action in Saigon and at the Mekong Delta. And when I asked what was the reason that 2 years after the U.S. left, the Army of Vietnam fell to the communists, he said simply, Congress cutting off the funding for their bullets, their aircraft, and everything else. They fought a poor man's war. But he's confident in the end, Vietnam will be free someday, and his mission will be accomplished. Roger Soucy, an American hero.
Thank you, John. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Heads up in Prince George's County on the inner loop of the Beltway in Lanham. It's jammed up between Route 50 and 202. That's the only delay right now on the Maryland side of the Beltway. If you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, you can go ahead and set your cruise control all clear on the northbound side and on the southbound side. In Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays east and west. And right now in Montgomery County on 270, it's all clear between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll have the chance for a few stray showers this morning, but then clearing out pretty quickly into the afternoon, becoming breezy at times. Temperatures today going to be a little bit on the cooler side into the mid and upper 50s. Later on tonight, clear and cool. Temperatures back into the 30s across region. A cold start to your Sunday. Will be partly sunny to mostly cloudy at times on your Sunday. The temperatures on the cooler side once again, with highs only into the lower 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 46 degrees in the nation's capital, 721. The Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the author of The Smear, Stonewalled and Slanted, and she hosts Full Measure tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Cheryl, always great to have you join us.
Great to be here.
States around the country are legalizing the sale of marijuana, but what I don't understand is that the federal government has yet to legalize marijuana. The Trump administration adamantly opposed to it. Help us to understand how you can have state laws that seem to be trumping federal law.
Well, I wonder the very same thing. And as I found out when I kind of dug into it, a lot of states, as you said, have legalized marijuana, but the federal government says it's not legal at all. In fact, the federal government says marijuana is still in the same class of illegal drug as heroin. So there are a lot of these conflicting laws and rules because the IRS is more than happy to collect millions and millions of dollars in taxes from the businesses that claim it's legal in various states while the federal government is saying it's illegal. And this is really coming to a head, all these contradictions, because so many states are continuing to pass laws legalizing pot. So I'm reporting Sunday for Full Measure for my cover story from Colorado, which, as you may know, was the first state to make recreational marijuana legal. We're going to talk about, you know, how that's impacting everything.
Well, we knew the Trump administration attorney general and the administration was very opposed to it, but new administration, new leadership, what would it take? Would it take the Congress? Does it go through the White House? How does that work?
Well, I think there's probably more than one way to skin that cat. A lot of people, including some members of Congress, such as Chuck Schumer, Senator Schumer of New York, they're pushing for a national legalization bill or, in some cases, a decriminalization bill, which is a little bit different. One just says it's not a crime, but the other says it's completely legal. But you'll hear in my story, one of the legal pot advocates, the first black owner of a legal pot business, tells me she's very disappointed in the Biden administration because Kamala Harris, who this person knows personally, she thought would really take the reins and be a leader in for the national legalization movement, and that hasn't happened. I don't know if the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration or agency, I don't know if they could unilaterally take marijuana off the list of drugs or reclassify it without a move from Congress, and that would change its status. but there's probably more than one way to do it.
You mentioned you're in Colorado. One of the most outspoken members on Capitol Hill is Ken Buck. And I know you've spoken a lot with him. I've been fascinated by the interviews you've done with him. And you're going to visit with him this week?
Yeah, because another thing I wondered, you know, we've all watched the last couple of years as Congress has dragged in the big tech CEOs and both parties asking them very tough questions and saying that they're going to do something to change something. And then nothing happens. So I kind of wondered whether or not you agree that the federal government should do anything. Why are they putting on what seems to be a show over and over again and then not doing anything? And Ken Buck is going to tell us the reason. He thinks, you know, like everything else, it seems, he says you follow the money and you'll find out why. Has to do with basically, I call it carrying a soft stick and speaking loudly. In other words, the opposite. They're making a big fuss as if they're going to do things. But in the end, because of big tech's influence with these politicians, whatever they end up doing, if anything, is probably going to be exactly what the big tech wants them to do.
Typically, when we hear about disappearing wildlife populations, you know, we all kind of say, oh, gee, this is terrible. What can we do to, you know, preserve the population? But you have an interesting story that's sort of the flip side of that coin.
It is. You know, it doesn't just fall along normal lines. It has to do with bringing back the gray wolf to states where they've disappeared. They used to be naturally, and then over time there have been encroachments in their habitats or hunting or whatnot. And Colorado is one of those states where they're not sighted. Very seldom is a pack sighted anymore. So they put this to a vote, which is kind of unusual. And voters said, yes, bring back the gray wolf. And so they're going to repopulate Colorado with gray wolves. That has the ranchers, whose livestock sometimes get attacked and eaten by the wolf population, saying, wait a minute, a bunch of people, mostly in Denver, who don't have to deal with the wolves, have voted to bring it back because it sounds all warm and fuzzy, but it's a lot more to it than that. So we'll have both sides of that debate because it's happening in other states, too.
Well, we'll see it all tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, Full Measure. Cheryl, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
7:30 News is coming up with Heather Curtis, and then we are back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Steve Bannon's indicted by a federal grand jury on two counts of contempt of Congress.
The former senior Trump advisor has since indicated that after refusing to comply with that January 6th select panel subpoena, he will surrender on Monday and appear in court. This just hours after former chief of staff Mark Meadows refused to appear before the committee.
Fox's Griff Jenkins. President Joe Biden's vaccine mandate for businesses with 100 or more workers will stay on hold for now. A federal court rejected a request from the Labor Department to lift the emergency stay it put in place last weekend. The court did not agree with the Labor Department's argument that keeping the stay would prolong the pandemic and cost dozens or even hundreds of lives a day. It's back to the drawing board for Virginia Republicans and Democrats who need to nominate expert advisors to work with the state Supreme Court on creating new congressional and legislative maps. The state Supreme Court rejected all three of the GOP's choices and one of the one Democrats put forth, saying they weren't neutral enough. The courts ordered them to pick new nominees.
There are plenty of people who have lots of experience in drawing maps. There are lots of political scientists, for example, who study this line drawing process. And they're in a position to talk very effectively about how to create districts that are consistent with state law.
Political science professor Dr. Stephen Farnsworth with the University of Mary Washington. WMAL Sports, the Caps beat the Blue Jackets 4-3. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, Inner Loop and Outer Loop, I just checked out the traffic cameras. All lanes are at the posted speed limit. On 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound lanes and the westbound lanes are clear of construction and crashes. on 95 in Virginia between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. You're not going to tap your brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And in D.C., 295, 395, and 695. Currently, there isn't any construction and no reports of any crashes. You'll be at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, stray showers this morning, clearing this afternoon, temps in the 50s. Tonight, clear and cool, temps in the 30s. Right now, 49 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:37, Saturday morning update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning, and on behalf of our listeners, I want to express our appreciation for your military service as we commemorate Veterans Day this weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Rick, thank you, and thank your listeners for paying for the fun I had for my entire career, so thank you all as well.
I want to talk about the situation on the Ukraine border with Russia. There's been a buildup of Russian troops. It's triggered concern among the U.S., the U.K., other Western allies, the potential of a military attack. And help us understand the history here. I mean, we saw the annexation of Crimea, and now put it all in context of why this is important.
So the Ukraine itself has been traditionally, even going back to Tsarist Russia, essentially part of the larger Russian state. It's been an area of great interest because it produces a great deal of things like grain, you know, grain, and it's an area where they had oil. There's great battles during World War II, and so during when the Soviet Union became the Soviet Union, Ukraine became part of that union. It was a wholesale member of that. The reason it matters now is because when the Soviet Union dissolved back in 89 and 90, it became an independent country. As a matter of fact, it became independent and gave up its nuclear weapons because on its soil, as a Soviet satellite or a subsidiary, it actually had nuclear weapons. And since 90, it's been independent. It's functioned as an independent country. It's the second largest country in Europe. And the issue has always been, at least since Putin has come in, is how does he reenact or reestablish the dominance and prestige of the old Soviet Union while being a Russian republic? And that's where we're at right now. There's been a number of very aggressive actions taken over the past 15 years, more and more pointed. With Putin really pushing hard to at least have some level of influence. And now, obviously, with the military action, there's been some guerrilla activity. Some people won't remember there was a downing of a civilian airliner going over the airspace a few years ago. And so this is a very serious matter.
And when we're looking at this, you've got leverage that they talk about. The UN says, well, we could do sanctions, things like that. Do any of these forms of leverage really have any impact on Vladimir Putin?
Well, Joe Biden taking off sanctions on oil pipelines and basically signaling that you're more worried about climate change than you are military action, then probably not. Again, Putin is not a guy who just kind of sits back and listens to people telling him what to do. There has to be severe consequences for bad behavior, and no one seems to be willing to stand up and kind of outline what bad consequences would be should the Russians continue to do what they're doing. So remember, a few years ago they did something with Georgia. They've done some. Again, the Russians have never suffered consequences for any of their aggressive actions, which have been at times very overt, others subdued. So at this point, no, I don't see anything serious on the table for, you know, the way they should have done this, Rick. If they were serious, they should have sent all sorts of troops into Poland, started doing some real exercises. They're not. And again, the Biden administration shows no signs of actually doing anything.
You know, one of the fun things about talking with you is that you are able to focus in on issues and you don't let them go. And as an example, we've talked about the supply chain issue, but not about consumers, but about the impact on the military. And I know this is something that is a continuing concern of yours. So I want to, you know, get your latest read on things as you've seen the developments over the past week and how important this is. And if somebody is listening at the Pentagon, why they should be paying more attention to this.
So, yeah, it's related to the very thing we just talked about regarding Russia and Ukraine, because one of the things that was noted, I was actually talking to a colleague about this last night. One of the notable things during the Cold War, Rick, is that we were able to exercise contingencies. One of the things we used to do is called return of forces to Europe, or forger, where we would actually exercise moving things, having material ready to go. So back on the 31st of October, the Biden administration did at least acknowledge that there are issues relating to material for the Pentagon. And they went through and did a kind of an executive order outlining all the issues. But as so much of what we're seeing right now, it's simply lip service. Making, basically doing strongly worded memos is not going to fix anything. It's not going to fix Ukraine. It's not going to fix the supply chain. So I've seen the same thing again here with the Pentagon, where they've essentially acknowledged, yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff we don't have. I was speaking with Dr. Stephen Hatfield the other day about medical issues, and he said obviously there's concerns about medicine for DOD, about if we actually had to go to war, what kind of drugs would be available to treat troops. These are all very serious issues, and like the Ukraine issue, there's really no serious effort being put forth. Everything that the administration's focused on is all social issues, climate change, which, you know, I have a degree in environmental studies, and we've talked about this. Speaking to someone who's got a degree, there's no evidence of extreme weather. There's no evidence of climate crisis. It's all being put forward for political reasons. So I think that's the danger here, is that we've seen this over and over. We've seen this movie before, Rick, and right now they're simply not being willing to do anything that's required to fix the actual problems they themselves have identified.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, also the host of the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. And I know you have our friend Gordon Chang on from time to time, and tell us what's the latest in the podcast department.
Well, speaking of Gordon, so the next thing we're up, we just taped yesterday, was the China Red Alert Part 5, I think. And we actually went through a number of issues regarding the China issues regarding Taiwan, what to expect regarding their military activity. And there's a theme here, because while I don't believe they're going to invade Taiwan, it's very clear that the Chinese are going to increase their bellicose and very aggressive action within the region based on the fact they don't think the Biden administration will do anything. So be sure and check that out this coming week.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and you can track him at the londoncenter.org website. Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Rick.
7:45, Saturday morning update, WMAL. KT McFarland is coming up next, but Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center right now.
I have a traffic update for you. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. All lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at the posted speed limit on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. If you're traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, I have no reports of any crashes or construction. And in Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not going to tap the brakes on the northbound side or on the southbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll have the chance for a few stray showers this morning, but then clearing out pretty quickly into the afternoon, becoming breezy at times. Temperatures today going to be a little bit on the cooler side into the mid and upper 50s. Later on tonight, clear and cool. Temperatures back into the 30s across the region. A cold start to your Sunday. Will be partly sunny to mostly cloudy at times on your Sunday. The temperatures on the cooler side once again, with highs only into the lower 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
46 degrees, 7:46, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's 7:50, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It's Veterans Day weekend. We are joined by KT McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration and the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, wonderful to have you with us this morning.
Always a pleasure and always an honor.
Thank you. We're honored to have you as well. Jen Psaki, back at the White House. She's in the press briefing room on Friday. Paints a rosy picture. Inflation is just a short-term issue. It'll go away next year. The economy is great. But how about the current picture of the economy for individual Americans?
You know, I don't know what's going on in Washington or maybe in the White House. I mean, I guess these people don't go to grocery stores, and they're driving around in government, you know, driven cars, so I guess they're not paying for their own gasoline. And maybe they're working long hours and they don't have to heat their homes. I don't know what's going on, but the rest of the country is really suffering. And the rest of the country is going to make it known to the Biden administration. I think they're going to, you know, if they bother to go home to wherever they think they're from originally, they're going to get a real earful. And certainly members of Congress are going to go home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they're going to be stunned by what they're seeing. So I don't think the Biden administration is going to have a very nice Christmas despite all the happy talk. And that's particularly because Americans aren't going to have a very good Christmas. The supply chain shortages are only going to get worse. They're not going to get better. The gas and the home heating prices, they're going to skyrocket this winter. And inflation is going to make everything much worse. So they can talk about, oh, we've got all these great salary increases people are getting. Really? You know, if your salary is going up 2% and inflation is driving all the prices up 30%, you're way behind. And that's just what's happening on the home front. You know, foreign policy-wise, this winter, things are going to get a whole lot worse. And a lot of that is because President Biden decided to allow the Russian gas pipeline to Europe. So Putin, Vladimir Putin, now has Europe, especially Germany, by the whip hand because he personally is going to control whether they can heat their homes this winter.
You know, it's boggling my mind as to the weakness that we seem to show on the world stage in just all areas. You know, the whole pitch on climate, we're the ones that are going to do all of the controls on our corporations and all the restrictions and eradicate coal and eradicate carbon emissions, but Russia and China aren't going to. They're going to keep doing their thing. So it's just troubling to see how the whole international foreign policy picture is so bleak moving forward.
Well, and it only is going to get worse. I mean, so for example, what happens this winter? So Putin has masked, through his puppet country, Belarus, they've masked an immigration crisis and a potential military crisis on the border of a lot of Eastern European countries, especially Ukraine. Putin can make a move against Ukraine, and nobody's going to be able to say no. He could make a very fast and quick move to cut off, it's called a Silwiki corridor. In about 24 hours, maybe 72 hours at the most, Russian forces could take Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. NATO members, by the way. They could take those countries, cut off those countries from the rest of Europe, and it would happen so quickly that Europe wouldn't even have a chance to respond, even if, for example, if NATO wanted to, and I'm not sure NATO even wants to support its NATO fellow members. Why? Because Putin can just turn off the gas. So if you have a crisis in the coldest winter months in northern Europe, and by the way, forecasters say it's going to be a really long, cold winter, you know, do those leaders of those countries really run a risk, Vladimir Putin shutting off gas and oil supplies to these countries? No, they're not going to do it. So we've given the Biden administration has given the whip hand to Vladimir Putin basically over Europe's future. And with Asia, he's done the same thing. And President Biden's going to have this virtual summit with Xi Jinping in the next week or so. And that's only going to bring more U.S. humiliation. The Chinese think that they have the whip hand over Biden. They're saying it openly. The Chinese president is mocking President Biden. He's mocking American democracy as being ineffective and dysfunctional. He's mocking President Biden as being sort of old and frail and unable to control things. And if the Chinese, you know, they're ready to make their move against Taiwan, the South China Sea. And what is President Biden going to do? I guess Jen Psaki will go up to the podium and say everything is just wonderful again. But the tragedy of all of this, Rick, is it is so preventable, and it could be reversed. Our position with Russia and China and with the American economy can be reversed quickly and easily and without firing a shot.
We saw what happened in Afghanistan. And when we talked to you, Katie, sometimes you will have these wonderfully positive messages. And, you know, as recently we were talking about politics and the future of the Republican Party and what could happen in 2022, 2024. And what would your message be to veterans today?
Hang on. The cavalry's coming. You know, the senior leadership of the American Armed Forces today, the woke generals, the Navy is now getting on board. We have to change everything to reflect current American values. So what are current American values? I guess they think it's the woke agenda. But the men and women in the armed forces, and our, particularly our veterans, you know, they're the real heart. They're the backbone of America. And America, at its core, has common sense and wisdom and optimism, and it is the opposite of what happens in Washington, D.C., particularly with this cultural woke agenda that the Democrats and the media and the far left seem to be pursuing. So I have ultimate confidence that in the election in 2022, the election in 2024, this wackadoodle spending and the crazy woke warriors and the loony direction a lot of people have taken the country in is going to be reversed, and it'll be like 1980 when Ronald Reagan was elected, and he reversed course of the previous administration and the previous decades, and he gave us a generation of peace and prosperity. I don't know who Ronald Reagan is for 2024, but I'm ready to look all around the country to find him, because I think the people in the nation are ready for a change, and that begins with the armed forces, because they, more than anybody in the whole country, when America kind of loses its grounding in values and what matters, it's always our veterans and our military who keep our values sacred. So I'm looking for a lot of leadership, new leadership for the nation to come out of the veteran core of America.
KT, thank you. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you so much.
Pleasure and an honor.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station.